As we're on the subject of the fact that you can only find corded headphones in airports, I can't wait until airlines and airplanes incorporate Bluetooth into each of the seats. I can't wait for the Boeing Supermax to have Bluetooth-enabled headphones. That should be fun. I'd love to watch Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3 as I take a nosedive into the North Atlantic. But here we are. It's Monday, March 11th. Will Menaker, Felix Biederman, Amber Frost, got Chapo coming at you. And, of course, to begin on this Monday, you know, I'm going to have to do a little Oscars recap. Felix, I know you didn't watch the Oscars, but Amber, did you watch the Oscars last night?
I did not. I know that everyone is mad at the biggest Jew of all Jewry that made the most Jewish fucking movie in the world, and now he's an anti-Semite, because that's basically, like, the recap that I have.
Felix, can I get you to refute your Judaism on today's show, or have you not seen The Zone of Interest?
What do you think? I mean, I agree with the message of the movie, unless it's saying, you know, that we should do Zone of Interest, in which case I'm against it. I want to congratulate the winner of last night's Oscars, Dan Quinn and Tree Besample, for their film, The Violin, An Apology to All Women.
There's going to be a sequel, I think, called Double Digits.
No, I mean, I saw what the guy said, and it's like, it was pretty tame.
All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say, look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
I saw a lot of funny stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Instantly after it. There is a guy who's like not even Jewish. He's just like a Greek guy who loves Israel. And he was like, oh, yeah, well, I dedicate your Judaism to the IDF.
Yeah, is that Abe Greenwald of commentary says, I dedicate Jonathan Glazer's Oscar to the brave and brilliant men and women of the IDF and to the state of Israel. Don't stop until the enemy is defeated.
That was Abe Greenfield who said that. The Greek guy said something like, the Greek guy who loves Israel said, you instantly endangered every Jewish person in the world. Like the fucking purge is going to happen at a bunch of Oscar parties.
I like the fact that there one comment on the Abe Greenwald comment is amazing to colonize Jonathan Glazer's speech. And then you see Rabbi Shmuley Biotech said, like, basically, cheers to Jonathan Glazer for his brilliant film about the Holocaust. Jeers to Jonathan Glazer for his comments about the Holocaust. And then, of course, my personal favorite of the reactions to, as you said, Felix, is Jonathan Glazer's rather, you know, like, I would say hardly inflammatory comments that he refutes that his Judaism and the Holocaust are being used to support the ongoing occupation of Palestine. But, of course, I had to check in. An old friend of the show, John Podhoretz, chimed in to say,
yes.
J-Pod said, Jonathan Glazer, you can go fuck yourself and stuff your Oscar up your ass. Which is, I like that because the Oscar has a nice flared base and it looks like it could go up someone's ass pretty easily.
Safely, yeah. I gotta say, though, I'm used to hearing the phrase, shove it up your ass. Stuff it up your ass sounds a little pornographic. It sounds like something you would hashtag on Pornhub. It doesn't sound the same thing as shove it up your ass. Stuff it up your ass, baby. Like, it's a little sexual, right?
Director of Sexy Beast gets stuffed by Academy Awards and rotund commentary magazine editor.
J-Pod does do that. So, like, sometimes he just goes hog wild. I mean, he took a long break from Twitter. And I think the thing that made him take a break, like, before this one, was something similar. Yeah, the thing that caused him to take a break is he said that, like, the New York Times should be bombed. Do you remember that?
No,
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, no, he said something insane like that. People are like, well, you know, what are you saying? And he was like, stick your head up your ass. Like, he sounds like Lex Grossman from Tropic Thunder.
He looks like Lex Grossman, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so take your Oscar and your Oscar speech and shove him up your ass. But hey, look, one thing I do remember about John Podhoretz, and I'll bring this into my review of The Zone of Interest. Do not take anyone to see The Zone of Interest unless they are hashtag fully adult. It is not a pleasant movie, and it's not appropriate for even a 15-year-old. So yeah. unless you are fully adult, or at least in J-Pod's terminology, look fully adult, please do not go to see The Zone of Interest. It's a very upsetting movie.
I thought the Holocaust was more of a PG-13 kind of atrocity.
Not in the Zone of Interest is interesting because it doesn't really actually show you much of anything that we associate with the Holocaust. But you know, I've already gave my summary of that film on last week's episode. But needless to say, if you haven't listened to this, I highly recommend The Zone of Interest. It's a fascinating and stunning and revolting movie. The other big thing from last night's Academy Award that I was shocked, not shocked to say, but I've been very pleased by the controversial reaction to it. Because, you know, someone mentioning the Holocaust or Israel, you know that's going to stir up the stupidest people imaginable. But I didn't think John Cena doing a bit where he appears nude with the awards envelope over his man area, I did not think that would rile up my favorite contingent of people, my favorite and yours, Felix, the people who see psyops everywhere.
Yeah.
People are now convinced that, you know, sort of goofy comic actor John Cena doing a bit where he pretends to be, or like, you know, appears to be nude on stage is an Illuminati humiliation ritual. And what I find fascinating about this is that they all heard Cat Williams' interview with Shannon Sharp, where he talked about sort of the buck-breaking tradition in the entertainment industry of putting black men in drag to sort of, you know, demasculinize them or sort of feminize them in some way. And they've now just applied it to a white guy like John Cena. So it's like a white guy doing a bit where he's like, oh, I'm naked. Oh, like, you know, here's the award. It's for best costume. Costumes are so important. That this now is like goofy white guys like John Cena can be buck-broken by Hollywood as well.
You know, what I thought was so interesting about it is like, John Cena was, you know, he started out as a pro wrestler and not one of the more dignified ones. Like,
wait, no. Build on that, please.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of dignity in pro wrestling because it is, you know, it's the closest you can get to just being like a professional buffoon. You know, you have to do all these steroids and like pretend to get slapped in the back.
I don't know. I always thought of it as like drag shows for straight men. I always thought, they let them have their version of that.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. But like John Cena.
You're right. It's less artistically inclined.
Yeah. I mean, John Cena, he arrived in pro wrestling as like a fully formed adult. And Vince McMahon was like, your character is black guy. And John Cena was like, okay. Like, he started out being degraded, is what I'm saying.
But it's strange how, like, even in the early 2000s, something like this would be, like, a kind of a good-natured, sort of bro-y, like, sort of, you know, humor in kind of, like, a cheeky bad taste that everyone understands is kind of, like, harmless and fun. But now I saw this one person, this, like, big QAnon account, Liz Cronkin. I don't know if you're a fan of hers. I'm a big Cronkhead. She said that this was, once again, that this was about grooming children. And it's like, he's an adult man. It's like 10 o'clock at night on the East Coast. What are you talking about?
Also, how is it sort of like, you know, emasculating him to be naked when he looks like that?
Yeah.
Like, he looked amazing.
You know what's actually emasculating about John Cena being naked? He doesn't have a single piece of body hair outside his eyebrows.
True. I don't like it.
He is completely shorn. He looks like a thumb.
It's a kind of castration, I would agree.
Yeah. So we've got the director of Sexy Beast endangered every Jew worldwide by making a Holocaust movie that's not it's not for Jewish people, okay? It's about how bad things can happen anytime to anyone. And then John Cena, of course, is being buck broken in an Illuminati humiliation ritual to feminize men and humiliate us and At the behest of Jimmy Kimmel, I might add. And then I guess like the last big news from the Oscars was Emma Stone doing a one-woman Dawes act to the Native American population of this country. Amber, I know as our favorite movie of the year, Poor Things, was sort of an upset contender last night. It won a lot of the technical categories.
I like Yorgos generally, but I definitely like, I was excited about it. You know, they definitely is getting too much of a wide berth. I'm not saying he's like a pedophile, but I think he's looking for a loophole to where it's okay to fuck a woman with severe brain damage. And speaking of Tropic Thunder, Emma went a little too...
She went half regarded.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why she won the award.
It definitely, like, I saw it with a friend and we were like, yeah, we were prepared for weird, but there's a little too much Freud in this for our taste. There's a little too much. Also, just like visually, it was clearly someone who had been given too much of a, like a budget. And I wanted to like it a lot. Sorry, homie.
Amber, if you thought Poor Things had too much Freud in it for you, I would not recommend the movie Beau is Afraid. If you haven't seen that one already.
I've heard.
Well, that was my favorite movie of the year, despite all of the Sigmund in it. Benny Johnson was the one who coined that John Cena was doing a male humiliation ritual. So I think that seeing John Cena naked, Benny was like, I'm being humiliated right now.
That's the most like for girls, like, oh no, this shirt doesn't even fit my boobs. Like, that's such a humble brag. It's like, oh, I'm humiliated and naked. Look at me.
One more thing from the Academy Awards. If you watched the TV broadcast, you did see an amazing commercial about fighting anti-Semitism in America that featured, it was like a young Elliot is doing his portion of the Torah at a synagogue. And then for some reason, like while he's having his bar mitzvah, the synagogue gets a bomb threat called into it. And then like they have to get everyone out of the synagogue. And then right across the street from the synagogue is a Christian church. And the pastor comes out and says, everybody, just come on in, like, you know, we'll host you. And then it had Elliot becoming a man reading from the Torah with a huge crucifix behind him, and it said, we can end hate when everybody like helps each other or something like that. But I did really appreciate that commercial.
I liked the Anti-Defamation League's I keep seeing it in between like commercials, like between like basketball, where it says anti-Semitic hate has gone up 388%. And I'm like, what is the quantify? Like, what's the metric you're using for that? How do you measure? That's really funny. It's really
funny.
Protest
where someone says the word Palestine. That's the metric they use.
They measure it through futures trading. There's a bunch of guys on the floor. Swastika, $39. I went to a lot. I didn't have a bar mitzvah myself. I went to a lot of them as a boy. But look, let's just say I knew a lot of kids who would have benefited from a bomb threat that evacuated. they were not doing a good job reading the Torah.
Everyone I've talked to has had one kind of mumbles through it, right?
Yeah, you can't get like a stupid 13-year-old to like, you know, speak like a 10,000-year-old language. That's not going to work.
No, yeah, I feel like, so I like the idea that Elliot called in the bomb threat himself because he knew he didn't study in Hebrew school hard enough. He was like, okay, what's the way I can still get like $10,000 in birthday money but not have to fucking embarrass myself in front of all my aunts and uncles?
It was definitely the equivalent of like pulling the fire alarm on the day of finals.
Yeah. 100%.
And then it cuts to, as they're shuffling everybody over to the church, it cuts to him at a payphone around the corner going like, oh no, it was actually the Lutheran church around, across the street. That's where the bomb's going.
Fuck. Lutherans deserve to die. I hope you all fucking die.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, bitch, this is Charles V. Just because I didn't finish the job.
Well, actually, this is a good segue into my next topic, which is things are afoot in the House of Windsor, the throne of Great Britain. So, okay, Kate Middleton has sort of been out of the public eye for the last couple months, right? And it was like according to Buckingham Palace, it was some medical leave or something like that. Like she had surgery or something. I think it was a BBL disaster. But anyway, like no one's seen her, and like the crown appears to be hiding her. And then they're like, okay, well, to deal with this, Kate Middleton released a photograph supposedly taken of her and her kids by Prince William. Right. That people immediately noticed all kinds of bizarre discrepancies in, like the fact that like the trees are in full bloom, even though it's early March, and all of the kids seem to have their fingers crossed. And then multiple news agencies refused to run the photo because they had determined it had been heavily edited.
Okay. So, but just to give them the benefit of the doubt, this is the royal family. I would not put it past them to produce a bunch of children with weird claw and flipper hands.
But okay. So you got, okay, King Charles, he's dead. He's treating his prostate cancer with smoothies right now. Kate Middleton, probably also dead. We don't know what's going on with her. And then you got Harry sitting on deck in like Hollywood trying, and he's been, you know, non-personed by the House of Windsor. So what's going on with the royal family? Could they take any more L's?
I mean, I know probably odds on that Charles is dead, but I like the idea that he isn't and he's just taking everyone out.
Yeah, that's classic royal family. He's like, oh, who's the biggest threat to my role? My son, obviously.
And it would be so funny for him to do that now, to kill everyone in the royal family now over a power struggle, when the royal family is basically like a Kiwanis club. Like all they do is like, oh, we're opening a new Tesco on the Isle of Jersey. We have to go to a ribbon cutting. It's like below mayor.
Yeah, it's just someone who marches in parades, definitely.
Yeah, I would be depressed if I had to be, you know, an English royal. It's just really depressing. You 200 years earlier, you would have maybe had some juice. But now, yeah, you have to support every charity in the world that's like, you know, they send Americans to some third world country to like build too many wells.
Yeah, I mean, my theory is like, you know, these children are just falling down wells.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, please stop.
The country is 50% well.
My theory is that they like engineered the crown. Like they hired like, you know, Saatchi and Saatchi to like, we need a campaign. We need to go viral again or something. And like the crown is purely like a PR campaign for them.
They should do a fake kidnapping with Kate.
Ooh.
Those always work. Fake kidnapping?
Yeah, Meghan would want to do it, but like...
Well, she's an actress. Yeah. I think they've done a real kidnapping to Meghan. But, you know, I'm just saying, let's bring back the IRA. Maybe they could do like a fake kidnapping of Kate. Maybe that's already happened. Maybe they're going to roll it out, you know, in April, right before Easter it'll come out. I don't know. But, I love royal watching, and I love the, you know, like, it's like, maybe this is all another sly op to make everyone lose their mind by having a photo where all the royal children are crossing their fingers. Because, like, you know, apparently, like, in hostage videos, you're supposed to do something like that to, like, or if you're being held against your will or being forced to present yourself, you're supposed to do something like that to signal distress or something like that. So maybe the fake IRA has kidnapped the royal family. Or, like I said earlier, a BBL disaster, her ass exploded, and they're hiding her from the public. So moving on from the royal family to some more political show business in this country, we didn't get a chance to discuss last week Biden's State of the Union address, which he got high marks from everyone. Everyone basically like just decided, they sort of like the lead up to it is like, oh, he's too old. And then he comes out, you know, apparently... I didn't watch it, but everyone said, "Oh, he delivered a great speech. You know, he was on fire. He was energized, and he's back." So Biden's back. He put all the questions about his age to bed. I don't think we'll be hearing any more about that, and I think he'll be smoothly sailing to re-election thanks to the State of the Union address. What did you guys make of the State of the Union? If you saw it, or the reaction to it after?
I kind of liked the reaction that was like, all he had to do was not fall off the dais, but they pronounced it dais, I think. And it's like, and hey, he brought it. So it's like he outperformed dying in public.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like, no, I think you know, everyone who said he's too old to be president, I hope they're eating their words right about it. I hope there's a big plate of crow to be shared among, you know, sort of the lesser podcasts, certainly not this one, because, you know, I've always said Biden's got it. He's sharp as he's ever been. But, you know, he really put the critics to bed with this State of the Union speech, where he said, among other things, we're going to be building a pier in Gaza to deliver the aid that Israel won't let in.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, this is the standard. Like, yeah, he made it through the entire thing without saying President Trump or, you know, going into like a brain death reverie over something that happened 71 years ago. But I don't think people realize how bad it looks when you brag about that. Oh, look who didn't completely fall. Look who didn't show up to the State of the Union naked. looks like you owe somebody an apology. And then there was a hot mic moment where who is he talking to? Whoever.
Oh,
some old congressman he's talking to was like, well, I don't think there'll be any questions about your mental competency tonight, sir.
Oh wait, was the thing that Dave Weigel shared where he was just like, no one will be saying you're mentally incapacitated now, Mr. President, and he goes, sometimes I wish I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, same.
But he had a contrived hot mic moment where he was telling someone, oh, I'm gonna turn up the heat on Netanyahu, and the guy, whoever he's talking to, goes, oh, we're on a hot mic, and he goes, good.
Yeah, like, yeah, I don't just believe that.
That's, yeah, like the Liz Warren Bernie CNN moment, you know. That was fake as shit.
No, yeah, talk about pro wrestling.
Yeah. Okay, well, as long as we're talking about it, in terms of turning up the heat on Netanyahu, he's been giving a lot of interviews this week because I think, you know, like I did the interview last week with the Uncommitted Movement. You know, his polling is in the fucking shithouse. And, like, I think it's clear that, like, they think that they just need to, like, keep saying the word. They need to say the word ceasefire or red line. But then, like, as soon as they say it, they contradict themselves. Like, in this interview with, I think, Jonathan Capehart from NBC, he said that, like, yeah, the invasion of Rafah is a red line for me. And then in the next sentence says, well, obviously there are no red lines. My red line is supporting Israel. And then Netanyahu immediately said after that, yeah, we're invading Rafah, whether you like it or not. But like, and the other poll was like this absolutely, talk about the zone of interest, this absolutely absurd idea that the U.S. military is going to build a port. No, not even a port, a pier on Gaza to help the flow of aid into Gaza. Because I guess just dropping boxes on a city full of people is not really cutting the mustard. So now they're going to build this again. And shout out to Muslim Tom, who I think gets this exactly correct. If you believe that they're actually going to build this pier, you like that's like Trump's wall. This is a baby-brained horse shit that, like, if the United States military came close to building anything like a functioning port in Gaza, Israel would bomb it immediately.
Yeah, not only would they, like, bomb it, like, they would just, first of all, it's way easier to bomb a port because it's a single centralized location. It's not the same as dropping stuff at which you can do it kind of scattershot. Like, it's all in one place.
We're doing Dunkirk in reverse to get, like, flour into Gaza.
Yeah.
It just seems like we should just, I don't know, drive it in, maybe?
Yeah, no, roads exist, aid trucks exist, they just happen to keep getting hit with cruise missiles, which could be coming from anybody, we don't know. But, yeah, it seems way easier to tell the country that you're giving baseline $3 billion a year to $17 billion this time, to tell them, hey, you know the big trucks that say United Nations on them? Like, don't shoot cruise missiles from your battleships on those. Just don't do that. It seems way easier to do that than to build a fucking port. But yeah, no, we're not even doing this to look busy. We're just saying this to sound busy. This is nothing.
Well, and again, like, too, it's like they're acting like they need to put a bigger sticker that says aid truck on it because this is all some big misunderstanding.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, yeah, we need to take a hot pink highlighter. Hot pink highlighter, do not bomb. And like the people are right about like the, it is kind of symbolic calling for a ceasefire because they're just going to be like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that.
Oh God. We've been writing UN on the side of the trucks, not on the top. So the F-16s they just looked like regular trucks full of people. And then they were like green light on that shit. But yeah, like if you, like whatever phony like ceasefire shit the Biden administration is talking about right now. So last week when I talked to to Waleed Shaheed of the Uncommitted Movement, one thing that he said that really stuck with me and it didn't fully like register while I was doing the interview. So I'd like to just like bring it up again here. He said that like he started the Uncommitted Movement because at the end of last year, he saw a memo that was being circulated among the cable and network news. I forget which, he didn't mention which network, but he said he mentioned a memo that he had seen that was circulated among the media that basically said that like all of the major news organizations were planning on shifting focus out of Gaza and just towards the presidential election as soon as January started, which is like, maybe it didn't register at the time because of how shocking it actually is. But I really think the thing now is that like people, I think they're trying to stick to that memo, but I think they're concerned that people aren't playing along with them. That like for some nagging pesky reason, Palestine and the horrors of Gaza continue to be on people's minds, and they continue to be a pain in the ass for the Democratic Party because basically anyone who's running for re-election right now or doing any kind of event cannot open their mouths without having 10 people shout at them to ceasefire now and the fucking genocide in Gaza. And I think for supporters of the president, I've seen a lot of comments now saying that, like, you know, if you're still angry about Joe Biden over Palestine, well, he said the word ceasefire. So if you're still mad at him because of that, then it was never really about Palestine to begin with. It was just about how much you hate the president. And it's just this weird, like, I guess in their mind, it's just like they're like words and actions don't really have to have any connection between them to be meaningful. It's just sort of like, well, he said the word, he's building the pier. What? There's nothing else he can do. What more do you want from him?
I also think that people are just checked out of the election. Like this time around, like they're like, this is not even good TV. Like nothing about this really matters to people. I haven't seen a single sign anywhere.
I mean, maybe it'll heat up like after the conventions. But like, as I said, from the beginning of the year, this whole thing is just on rails. The outcome is predetermined other than what the election itself is going to be. But yeah, like there's just no juice or excitement here because I think like for most people, this is like, we got to do this shit again. Really?
Yeah. And I think also like people still have, I don't know, the mindset that was the problem for the Hillary campaign where they're like, we got this thing locked up, but they still need to like, I guess, remind people about it. But everyone seems to be disengaged. I kind of only pop in when I'm like, oh, Trump won another, you know, like other than that, I'm just kind of checking in with what's already happening as it happens.
Yeah. No matter what happens, there's nothing new that we're going to see again. I mean, we've seen both these men, you know, be president for 4 years. There's even a limit on how funny it can be when they debate each other. We know we're not going to get anything fun out of that. They you know, put Joe Biden under a heat lamp like a premature baby before debates with Trump, and he just mumbles through them. There is nothing exciting that can happen.
I think if he loses, he's going to die immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
Why can't he do that now? I mean, it would be the most honorable thing he's done in his entire career, is if he just
No. I don't even think it's going to be like dispiriting like for him, and that's why he's going to die. I think they're just going to like cut off the supply of drugs that they've been giving him, which have probably been like lowering his life expectancy by quite a lot, just so he can have like 10 more minutes of lucidity a day. I bet had he not been elected, he would, and I bet it's eroding his actual like capacity to think straight. I bet if he had not won, he would win. He would live. He would have lived longer, and he would have had a more generalized lucidity. Like he still would have had senior moments, but he wouldn't have been in such stressful situations where he would just like he was just like eroding in front of the entirety of America.
What they're doing to Biden right now is something I guess can best be described as overclocking his brain through a sort of pharmaceutical cocktail, which can't be good for him. But Emily, you said like, how much life does this guy have left in him? I mean, really, truly, only the good die young. But I mean, Felix, like the only exciting, I've said this before, but the only exciting thing that could happen is if one or both of them die. And I just think like it would be the best thing for the country, and it would be the best thing for Joe Biden for him to just go. Just go, like, you know, like the next time he has a little shiver in the night, just roll into it. You're right, Ember. As soon as they stop giving him those injections or whatever, he'll just turn to dust or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably what they were rushing out of Afghanistan with, like the cargo doors on the plane open, just the last opium plants to take back to the Oval Office. He is making an affirmative choice every day, saying, I'm not going to just let my heart stop today.
Mm-hmm.
If I wake up in the middle of the night gasping, you know, Dr. Jill is going to hook me up to a 9-volt battery that she takes out of the smoke detector. I don't see Trump dying in a similar way. Trump, no matter how old or how fat or however bad he looks, something about that man just screams plane crash death. He's the exact type of person who dies in a plane crash.
I'm thinking toilet. Dies on the toilet.
Yeah.
I mean, he must have the most impacted bowels of all time.
Oh my, yeah. The process of him shitting is probably like reloading a musket.
His guts must be like a cement mixer. Like,
yeah.
This is also making me imagine that there will someday be a last Donald Trump post.
Oh my God. Yeah.
They've gone downhill now that he's on Truth and can like do full paragraphs so they don't have the succinctness and the bite. But still, there's going to be one last post where he's complaining about like the bad fashion on the Emmy's red carpet and why that's against the MAGA agenda. And then it'll be it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he won't even mention MAGA. He won't even have to. He's just going to be like, Emma Stone, you look fat. Like, that's going to be the entirety of it.
Trump's last post. I've seen things you people would not believe. Roast beef under heat lamps at Mar-a-Lago. Eric Roberts hitting a hole-in-one at a celebrity golf tournament after Anheuser Gate. Time to die. But then I guess like the other big thing from the State of the Union address was, of course, the Republican rebuttal to the State of the Union address, which honestly it got a lot more burn than Joe Biden's speech because it was widely heralded as a disaster. It was delivered by Alabama Senator Katie Britt, who's sort of hailed as a rising star in the Republican Party. And God, like I think the Republican Party uses the State of the Union rebuttal to cash out like people who are quote unquote rising stars who they know are losers and they want to get rid of early, like Mark Rubio or Bobby Jindal. Do you remember how bad their rebuttals were and how it like sunk their national political careers? This Katie Britt lady, I think they were like, there's something off with her. We don't want to deal with her. Give her the State of the Union rebuttal that she delivered in like a kitchen seemingly devoid of kitchen implements. And she like whispered the entire thing. She was going, America, we see you. We feel you. We know you feel unsafe. We get it. It was bizarre.
She's fucking iconic. I mean, I've already had like a million gays like send me that video and be like, I love this psychotic bitch. She has absolutely no future. But did you see the video where someone layered like Angelo Badalamenti over it?
Yeah.
Laura's theme.
America has been tested before. And every single time, we've emerged unbowed and unbroken. Our history has been written with the grit of men and women who got knocked down. But we know their stories.
Yeah. And it kind of felt like it's, I don't know. It just really, really worked. You're like, yeah, she knows where Laura Palmer is buried.
Do you think that if you're falling in space, you slow down or do you go faster and faster?
I just remembered that Laura Palmer wasn't buried, but she knows what happened.
Well, she was wrapped in plastic and dumped.
Yeah.
But Felix, did you catch any of Katie Britt?
Yeah, no. I mean, she sounded like she couldn't be too loud or her husband would yell at her.
He's sleeping on the couch in the next room. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing the mock draft. Shut up, you bitch. Very strange. But when was the last time there was like a GOP rebuttal where like Republicans liked it?
Because well, never.
Yeah, never. Democrats eat that shit up. That's why, like, the first Trump State of the Union, there were like 15 versions of the Democratic rebuttal.
They all wanted to get in.
Yeah. It was like a terrible posse cut. Like a terrible, like, backpack rap posse cut.
Like lyricologists.
Yeah.
She definitely went rogue and, like, didn't check in with anyone, or she checked in with anyone. And, like, what Will said is that, like, they just need a few sacrificial lambs to, like, draw fire early on. And they were, like, really encouraging. Like, they're like, yeah, just speak from the heart.
Yeah, because, like, it is pathetic how, like, Democrats will get legitimately excited about their shitty candidates. How, like, a grown man will be like, I'm so excited about Ruben Gallego. But...
But have you seen the latest fire from Katie Porter and her whiteboard?
Yeah. But Republican, like, I've mentioned a few times how I follow this guy, formerly of Team Mitch McConnell, and he's like, you know, he is the swamp creature. He has to pretend to like all these people, right? And even he can't really do a convincing job. Like, it is torturous to be a Republican and to try to be like, you know, oh, I'm really excited about Blake Masters. Look at Katie Britt, the fucking 33-year-old sorority girl we found. The 33-year-old Alabama freshman.
Super senior.
Yeah.
Super senior, Roll Tide.
Yeah. They don't do the Democrat thing where they are legitimately into all the other candidates because, you know, why would they? It's the Trump show. There's no one else to be excited about.
No, I think she's sort of a Judas goat that goes out there, draws the fire, lets Trump do his thing, is an embarrassment. But, like, yeah, I mean, remember Rubio drinking from the bottle of water, Bobby Jindal coming down, like, taking 5 minutes to walk down, like, a spiral staircase and approach the microphone? Bizarre. But all of them are losers, so I think Republicans, they can smell a loser. You know, like I think that's why they put them out there to, you know, like, again, just get riddled with bullets, essentially. But Felix, look, you mentioned the Mitch McConnell staffer that you follow. We got to talk about Mitch's sister-in-law, because this is a hell of a story. Angela Chow off a bean drove into a pond.
Put me in a Tesla. I'm going to die right now.
I loved your RXK verse. Off a bean, drove into a pond. I knew Angela Chow was off a bean when she drove into a pond. I put the Tesla in reverse. I'm seeing God. But, you know, this is, I saw, okay, his headline here is Angela Chow, shipping CEO Angela Chow, sister of former cabinet member Elaine Chow, died after car became submerged in pond. To which I say, if you ask me, that's a sacrifice. That's a sacrifice.
It is such a sacrifice. If it isn't, that's pathetic.
Oh, I think Elon Musk killed this bitch. I really do. I think he just opened up his laptop and hit reverse on her Tesla in his control panel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably giving him too much credit. But, like, this story is incredible. This is from CNN. Angela Chow, CEO of shipping company Foremost Group and sister of former U.S. Cabinet Secretary Elaine Chow, died after her car became submerged in a pond on a Central Texas ranch last month, according to the Wall Street Journal in a report from Blanco County Emergency Services obtained by the Austin American-Statesman. Chow's Tesla Model 10 SUV went over an embankment and into a pond when she put the car in reverse instead of drive during a three-point turn shortly before midnight on February 10th, the Wall Street Journal reports. This has echoes of Michael Hastings here. Like, if you have a car with a computer in it, sell it, because they're going to kill you. They're going to kill you with your car.
100,000%. Yeah, that is that.
It went over an embankment just by putting it in reverse. Come on, man. And then, of course, like, because of the Tesla, she couldn't break the window or open the door.
Yeah, no, this is, I would hope for her family's sake that this is a Michael Hastings situation, because otherwise, like, that is how, like, an assistant football coach in Moline, Illinois dies, just driving into a pond. But I saw people talking about it, you know, apparently she was like blowing up everyone's phone, being like, come help me, my car is sinking, which is like,
Oh, God.
Have you considered that people are in meetings? Why don't you text?
It's so horrible.
You know, if your car is slowly being submerged in water, probably best to hit the Twitter DMs. I'm going to respond to that a lot quicker than I will a text, email, or phone call. Mm-hmm. Oh, but, you know, if you follow me, because if you don't follow me and you're trying to contact me because your car is slowly drowning, don't even bother at that point because I'm not going to see the message.
Yeah.
But like, okay, why would Elon Musk or the deep state or the Illuminati, why would they kill this shipping CEO? I mean, we all know about Cocaine Mitch and what, you know, they're probably what the foremost shipping company. There's some sort of associations there with Cocaine Mitch and whatnot. But I don't know, like, is Elon Musk draining the swamp by killing the relatives of Mitch McConnell? Cui
bono? Yeah, that's beneath him.
I think, like, maybe by accident. I could not see him doing it on purpose.
No,
if he tried to do it on purpose,
he would tweet about it.
He would tweet about it. He would be like, oh, I invented a new satellite that's going to kill them with a laser. And it just never gets off the ground. No, yeah, I don't trust him to do it off, you know, through his own powers.
And Occam's razor, it's just a garbage suicide car.
It's a terrible car that kills people. It's one of the least safe automobiles ever created.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you guys, I was looking into the Pinto, the historic Pinto. I think it ended up in a congressional hearing. And I found out the reason that became such a big deal didn't have anything to do with the numbers that they associated, even like very, very generously associated with like the number of like crashes, deaths, explosions. It didn't even have to do with the count. It was the fact that a memo was leaked that covered the minutes where they hired some kind of quant to do a cost benefit analysis of how much a lawsuit would cost them versus how much a recall and upgrade would cost them. Now compare that to just like these stupid robot cars that are just rolling into ponds and getting into massive pileups. Like, we've just given up.
I think you have to sign an NDA before you buy a Tesla or get it fixed. So, yeah, RIP to Elaine Chao. What a stupid way to die. Your self-driving car kills you by backing into a pond. All right, so to close out the show today here, how about a reading series about the perils of dating in the modern world? This is by Jane Prinsley for the Jewish Chronicle. Headline: Hinge and Tinder are swamped with anti-Zionism, say Jewish singles. I'm sure it's a big problem for both you and Amber. So the article begins as such. Meet 26-year-old Amy. She's single, likes puppies, and is looking for a date on Hinge. But it's not just good-looking men she's after. She goes crazy for a free Palestine. At least that's what her dating profile says. Felicity tells singles on Hinge, the way to win me over is having higher emotional intelligence than a turtle, loving spicy food, and being pro-Palestine. Youssef says, the dorkiest thing about me is that I write poems in my spare time. Underneath these words is a photograph of him waving a Palestinian flag. Lauren cuts to the chase by simply saying, no Zionists. Lee wants to make sure we're on the same page about free Palestine. So does Savannah and Boris and Michaela. But although there are some pro-Israel profiles, most of the messages flow in one direction. Jewish singles on Hinge tell the JC that between 1 in 10 and 1 in 3 of their matches have something anti-Israel on their profile. You just can't get a date anymore if you love Israel.
Dude, it's made its way to Grindr, which is like politics on Grindr. What is the world coming to?
Yeah.
I'm into rimming and also a free Palestine.
I don't care if you support Israel as long as you're uncut.
My friend sent me something that his ex-boyfriend got through Grindr, just like a random message. He sent me a screenshot, and his ex is Navajo, and it goes, you're sick, how fucking dare you? While Israel sends water technology to Navajo Nation, how dare you? Perfect, and the guy responds, perfect example of your ignorance, peace, bro. And then he responds, no peace for you, none. Nightmares of murdered children for you. family members held in torture.
Jesus Christ.
What water technology are they sending to the Navajo Nation? Like, what are the most successful, like indigenous enterprises? Like, what were they just, like, eating sand before? And they're like, water, holy shit, we never thought of that. Thank you, Israel.
I love that. Would Israelis pretend they invented irrigation?
Yeah. They made the desert bloom. Okay.
Yeah.
It's you know, as if dating wasn't hard enough. It's getting worse. Apparently, if you support Israel, the article continues. What's more, while app algorithms are challenging to pin down, Jewish daters say that their matches have gone down since the war started, and they think it's got something to do with the Jew stamp on their profile. JC editor at large Stephen Pollard took to Twitter to express his frustration with a number of anti-Zionist profiles on Hinge. I noticed a few weeks after October 7th that some profiles started to show the Palestinian flag, he says. I didn't think much of it, but something has happened more recently. It's not yet the majority, but many profiles I see now say no Zionists. Now divorced, 59-year-old Stephen downloaded Hinge last summer. A few months of swiping later, Palestinian flags started appearing. I don't have a problem with the Palestinian flag. People can share whatever flag they like, but people who post no Zionists are basically saying no Jews. It's what they think is an acceptable way of saying it, he adds.
I like the idea that, like, okay, this guy had only been on it for a few months before, like, October 6th, and I'm sure he was doing great and getting a lot of matches before then. This seems like a lot of cope.
Stephen Pollard looks like, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say Stephen Pollard looks like 10 times more physically revolting than John Podhoretz. He looks like a blobfish. He is a disgusting creature. And if he's not getting any matches there, I mean, he goes on to say, it's like the signs that used to read, no blacks, no Jews, no dogs, no Irish. Well, in your case, just a sign that says no dogs would be appropriate, Stephen.
Yeah. I like that it's like they used to not be able to get into bars and public houses. Now we don't have access to pussy.
Irish need not apply.
Yeah, this is an outrage. This is discrimination. Not sucking my dick is discrimination.
I don't care if your wife backed up into a pond. I don't agree with being like a 60-year-old man who's like on Hinge. I also don't agree with Hinge making Jews wear the Jew stamp in their profile, though. I'm also against that, but both parties could be wrong here.
It says here, Stephen says there are masses of Palestinian flags on Hinge, and he's come across profiles of women who say, no turfs, no Tories, free Palestine. It put me off opening the app, he says. 22-year-old Hannah, not her real name, has also distanced herself from dating apps since realizing how many potential matches were diametrically opposed to her when it came to Israel.
Yeah, that's dating. Like,
yeah, that's called dating. Yeah. I mean, like, I just, like, this whole thing, it just seems to be, like, sort of more whining just about being unpopular. It's just, like, it's the conflation of being unsafe with being unpopular. Like, look, if Zionism is a huge part of your personal identity and dating preferences, you can't really get mad when, like, you know, Zionism becomes associated with something that most people are kind of horrified by and wouldn't really want to have sex with someone, let alone a potential relationship with someone whose values are so diametrically opposed. And, like, look, would any of these people under regular circumstances date someone who was Palestinian or opposed to the occupation of Palestine? Of course they fucking wouldn't. They hate people like that.
Putting that shit in there means they're saving you a wasted first date.
Yeah, you have incompatible values.
I just think, like, the only reason this article exists is because you could assume, sort of broadly speaking, that, like, Israel was, like, sort of the mainstream okay position, and that having, like, an Israeli flag on your dating bio isn't controversial. But now that the shoe's on the other foot, whereas having a Palestinian flag would be, now that the shoe's on the other foot and most people fucking hate Israel, these people are just, they're crying that it's not fair now, because they used to be, like, I don't know, coasting off this assumption that, you know, being a Zionist was normal. When it's never been. The article continues. Zach, 35, says, I got pretty disillusioned after I found myself consistently matching with anti-Zionists, even when I said it to Jewish only. They can't catch a break. They can't even find Jews who like them anymore. Jesus Christ.
That's a setting?
Yeah, isn't Jewish only.
Isn't JJ like
Felix? Felix is immediately
back.
Wondering if Hinge has the opposite setting. So Zach put an Israeli flag emoji on his profile to rectify the situation. It's annoying because the more creative personalities I normally go for tend to be more anti-Israel. Now he's having fewer awkward conversations about the conflict, but the people he's matching with are less interesting. Oh, what a shame, Zach. I'm sorry. What? There's not enough Batyas and Bowries in the sea for these guys.
Can I just say, if we are to take, like, you know, people like the Forward or the ADL at their word that we are on the verge of a second Holocaust, that, like, it has never been worse, there's nowhere safe in the world for Jews except Israel, that, like, you wouldn't write this article. Like, there wasn't, yeah. In 1936 yeah. In Germany, they were like, why is it so hard to, you know,
Gentile pussy anymore? Yeah. That would, like, put a target on your back. They were.
I keep matching with
down.
Ilsa of the SS.
Yeah.
So it says here, then there is 27-year-old Jacob. Back in October, the conversation on a first date with someone who wasn't Jewish turned into an uncomfortable debate about Israel. Jacob says he is not keen on repeating that. When he matched with the girl of his dreams on Hinge, they quickly planned a date. The day before, they swapped social media links, and he saw her Instagram was flooded with anti-Israel content. The girl had been at anti-Israel rallies and was sharing content that made Jacob uncomfortable. He decided not to meet her and texted her to apologize. He received this curt response. Thanks for letting me know. Have a nice day. Oh, my God. The hatred.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God. Can you imagine getting a response that curt?
They're preventing you from wasting your time. You should be thanking them. Like, isn't your whole thing is that you're closing ranks? But no, they have to let everyone like them. They have to make everyone like them. It's so fucking lame. Forget like being like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe if everyone's going this way, I should just for a minute consider my position. Forget that. That's not happening. That's not happening. But they don't get that it's like, well, this is what do you want to do? Get in a date where you argue about Israel?
Some people might like that. Maybe it's like a fetish or something. But Amber, it goes beyond that, because just a few paragraphs earlier, there was the guy who was like, yeah, okay, I'm matching with only pro-Israel ladies now. The problem is they're also fucking boring. I don't know what to do. It's like, have one or the other, okay? Like, I mean, like, if it matters to you, like, stand up for yourself. Or you should just consider pretending not to support Israel to get some pussy.
Yeah, would that really be, like, the worst thing anyone has ever done to, like, you know, get a girlfriend or something? I've gone to karaoke night with all the girls' friends. And I consider that...
And believe
you
me,
know,
Felix would rather go to a kibbutz than a karaoke night with a girl and her friends.
Yeah. In both situations, I'm coming armed.
So it said, like many singles who dodge anti-Israel dates, Jacob was pleased he didn't waste more time on the girl, but wondered what the date would have turned into. After that, he started matching with more Jews. The next so it worked out for him. Glad he shared this story. The next month, Jacob met another woman on Hinge. They discovered they were both going to an anti-Semitism march in central London and arranged to meet for a date afterward. They met at the demo, but the freezing weather at the parade in November, amid signs such as United Against Anti-Semitism, didn't make for the most romantic start, and the pair were too cold and tired for sparks to fly. There has been no second date.
Okay, that is one of the worst excuses I've ever heard. Oh, yeah, it was just too cold for me to get horny.
That's idiotic, too, because, like... cold is a huge opportunity to touch someone with plausible deniability. You just got no game.
This is like, I mean, this reminds me of our show last week with Osita and the constitutional right to be cool. This is sort of similar. We, like, there's a the constitutional right to be like not discriminated against, like, extends to your dating preferences, or rather, not your dating preferences, other people's dating preferences. Because it's like, I don't know. I mean, like, is it discrimination if, like, you know, because, you know, I've seen a thing lately about how they're like, there's less and less relationships across voting lines, and people are sort of lamenting that, like, we're losing something. And I guess, like, I don't know, it used to be when the parties were, like, not ideologically coherent, you could have, like, a Republican dad and a Democratic mom. But now things are pretty much sorted out. So it's like, is it really a shock that people aren't choosing to, like, form lifelong partnerships based on diametrically opposed values? And is that a bad thing?
I kind of wonder if this might convert some people. Because, like you said, like, people do stuff for pussy when they get lonely. Do you know how much baseball I've watched? Do you know how many Beetlejuice videos I have been to? Do you know how many times I have had to say, baby, I love you, but I don't want to watch any Stephen A. Smith videos right now. You do things for people you love.
So yeah, that's the article about how it's hard to date now as a Zionist. But, you know, I think you have exactly the right take on this, which is that, like, if we were on the verge of a second Holocaust, like, yeah, this article would not be getting written. People would have much more pressing concerns rather than whether their hinge date was at an anti-Israel rally.
Yeah, where the Gentile women at would not have been running in one of those radical Jewish newspapers.
I just, like, I am stuck on, like, the guy who said it was too cold for his thing to, like, it's just like, it's like, are you a Brazilian MMA fighter who lost? What kind of excuse is that?
That's the easiest way to get physically close to somebody. It's better
have a hot toddy and canoodle.
Yeah, it's better than like being at a scary movie together. Just like, oh no, I'm cold. Girls pretend to be colder than they are all the time, just to give them an excuse.
Sorry, I didn't get a second date because we both ate cocaine tainted goat meat, and I was not in my best shape for the weigh-in before the second date.
Girls can withstand extreme cold. People leave their girlfriends outside all night and they're fine.
All right, I think we should leave it there for today's episode. Do we have any plugs, any show business at the end of the episode here?
No, I would just say, you know, if you didn't listen to the Movie Mindset episode from last week, we've set a release date for season 2. That's going to come out April 24th, 10 episodes of Movie Mindset coming out at the end of April. And I think that we're also not confirmed, but I think there's going to be a live show in New York around then for Movie Mindset, probably a screening of some kind, a little talk back with Will and Hessa. So that will hopefully get set
Hope
soon.
To see you
that's,
all
that's the big thing
at the movies.
I forgot. I will be joining Seeking Derangement on the 4th. If you are in Los Angeles at the Lodge Room, it should be very, very, very fun.
Oh,
I will be
doing that show too.
Yeah, I will be on
that
too.
Good job, dude.
Yes.
Well, after that, you're getting kicked off.
You know, Jacques's been arranging this, so it's been a little chaotic. But yes, Lodge Room, April 4th. All three of us, I'll be there in the audience. So yeah, we will all be at the Lodge Room April 4th in Los Angeles, hanging out with the Seeking Derangements crew. So if you're in one of the two cities in America that matter, you can see us.
All right, everybody. Till next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, wrap it up. I'll be the sun, shining up.